Today on Edinburgh Radio News.
My suggestion to the Speaker has been and will continue to be, let's stop the excuses, let's take a vote in the House, let's end this shutdown right now.
Day 8 of the government shutdown. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Edinburgh Radio News for Tuesday, October 8th, 2013. I'm Anna Yukar. It looks like President Obama's speech had no effect in a resolution with Republicans to end the government shutdown. The president said he's willing to talk to Republicans after they agree to restore government funding and raise the debt limit. After today's speech, House Speaker Boehner said he was disappointed in the president's approach. With negotiations again at a standstill, we can expect another day of federal furloughs. National parks and recreation centers have been closed because of the government shutdown. As Madeline Ewells reports, one of them is close to home for many Los Angeles residents.
The Santa Monica Mountain Recreation Area is more than 240 square miles. It's hard to believe, but according to hikespeak.com, one in 17 Americans lives within an hour drive of the Santa Monica Mountains. The popular SoCal destination is on lockdown, but that didn't stop a few frustrated visitors from trying to get in. The park superintendent says someone cut the locks at the Rancho Sierra Vista and Cheeseboro Palo Camado Canyon entrances over the weekend. As a result, other visitors were led to believe that the trails were open. Park rangers are asking people to stay out of the park because they don't have the personnel to keep visitors safe. The recreation area's website, Twitter, and Facebook accounts are inactive due to the shutdown. Madeline Ewells, Annenberg Radio News.
Since 9/11, 2 million men and women have served in Iraq and Afghanistan. Thousands of veterans are returning home to face unemployment and homelessness. In order to meet veteran needs, the mayor, USC, and an LA Veteran Affairs organization have made a pact to help. Asal Asanipour reports on a conference held today to address these needs.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands.
Today, the University of Southern California's Price School of Public Policy welcomed veterans and policymakers in a conference to support the urgent needs of veterans. The full auditorium gave a standing ovation to the celebrated General David Petraeus, the kickoff speaker. He charmed the crowd with stories of recent push-up competitions and jokes about his military service. But then, the general, who is now a USC professor, got serious about what U.S. veterans need.
Neither going back to school nor entering the civilian workforce is as easy as it might seem. There is a clear and critical need for the right transition programs, college refresher courses, job skill training, transition mentoring, and assistance programs for veterans struggling with persistent unemployment and, in some cases, homelessness.
Other keynote speakers stressed the psychological needs of veterans. Team Rubicon, a coalition of military veterans and first responders, mobilizes veterans through volunteer opportunities around the world. Jacob Wood is the co-founder and a veteran himself.
I understood that these hands that I had, these skills that I had that were trained for war, could just as easily be trained in peace.
Wood emphasized that giving veterans a purpose, community, and sense of self was key to helping veterans transition back to civilian life. But others see a reason to address more than veterans' emotional needs. Robert Florkowski is the special assistant to General Petraeus. He also served as a sniper in the U.S. Army. He says real changes can be made by fixing a broken Veterans Administration.
I think the VA needs to undergo a drastic reformation. I think that state and local policies need to be changed. And I think that a nationwide PR campaign, understanding our veterans and how to care for our veterans better, could be launched.
Of the 2 million veterans in California, 20% are in Los Angeles. The challenge for veteran centers and support organizations is providing emotional and social resources for a growing number of veterans returning to civilian life. Asal Asanipour, Annenberg Radio News.
The LA LA County Board of Supervisors approved a $10 million budget this afternoon to fund the move of hundreds of jail inmates. Just before the supervisors met today, unhappy inmate families and activists protested the move. Amen Oyibuke has the story.
Fired up! Can't take it no more! We're fired up! Can't take it no more!
We're fired up!
Several dozen local advocates of prison inmates gathered outside the LA County's Board of Supervisors office this morning. They were protesting the plan to move prisoners to Kern County. It will send 500 inmates now housed in LA County Jail to the Taft Correctional Jail, 118 miles away. Taft Jail closed in 2011 due to a lack of funding. This move will reopen the facility. Community activist Mary Sutton says transferring a huge number of prisoners away from LA County will hurt the community.
We want them to cancel the contract with Taft. Do not send LA County prisoners way up to Taft. And we want to put the $10 million of AB 109 money that they want to use to afford that Taft contract, and we want them to put it in the community.
The inmates being sent to Taft are nonviolent felons who previously would have gone to state prisons. The state is under court order to reduce prison overcrowding under a process known as realignment. The state is housing prisoners convicted of non-serious and non-violent felonies to county jails. Sutton believes there are better ways to reduce overcrowding.
Locking people up in cages does not make them safer. It does not rehabilitate them.
The crowd gathered on the steps today was made up of religious leaders, artists, and activists holding rainbow-colored signs saying, "Education, not incarceration." Reverend Peter Larman was among them. He believes the emphasis on incarceration hurts the justice system.
There are at least 3,000 people in this massive county jail system who could be released right now, safely, with no impact on public safety. There are people with mental illness. There are people awaiting trial who are nonviolent. There are all kinds of ways to do this. And yet the sheriff and the supervisors continue to do a knee-jerk thing and say, well, we've got crowded jails. The answer is more jails. The answer is no. The answer is release people who don't need to be in jail.
County supervisors say they want inmates to serve their full terms, and this move will relieve the burden on LA County jails. Amen Oyibuke, Annenberg, Radio News.
LA Board of Supervisors also voted today to authorize $29.3 million for jail reforms. Three LA firefighters were injured battling a fire that raged through a historic South LA church. Firefighters were able to prevent the fire from spreading to areas surrounding Crouch Memorial Church on East 27th Street. One firefighter was taken to a hospital. He's expected to be released tomorrow. Another suffered an electrical shock, and the church's pastor believes the fire may have started in a wall heater. The church was built in 1893. It was the center of the LA Prohibition movement in the early 1900s. The Nobel Prize in Physics was awarded to a Belgian and British scientist. As Martha Daniel reports, Francois Englert and Peter Higgs were recognized for the discovery of the Higgs boson particle.
After decades of research, the most basic building block of the universe has been discovered. Why are people excited about the Higgs boson particle? Here's USC physics professor Dr. Clifford Johnson.
Well, I've been waiting for my whole career. Others have been waiting for even longer to see this really confirmed.
Johnson says scientists have spent decades studying the Higgs boson particle, the cornerstone of particle physics.
The Higgs mechanism and the particle associated with it are what's responsible for the masses of elementary particles, the basic building blocks that we know that make everything up. You can actually measure that they have masses.
Scientists led by Englert and Higgs were able to confirm the existence of the particle by colliding atoms at speeds that mimic the Big Bang. A discovery like this also opens the door to new questions.
Getting to grips with this particle that gives you the origin of the mass of these elementary particles is going to be a very important part of the story for then probing this next frontier. So now we have this foundation, we can move further.
This all may be simple enough to a physicist, but what should the average Joe understand about this crucial development?
The Higgs is crucial. It is one of the most central particles that touches all the other particles in the universe that we know of. And that's pretty amazing that we can study that.
Englert and Higgs will receive their award in December. Martha Daniel, Annenberg Radio News.
Angelinos, brace yourselves. The temperatures will be dipping below the 70s this week. Tomorrow's highs will be in the 60s and we'll have a 60% chance of rain with high winds. But sunny weather should be back in time for the weekend. Later on Annenberg Radio News, the art of negotiation. Both USC and Occidental College are under federal investigation for underreporting sexual assault cases. As Sarah Zahedi reports, students at USC are hoping to help change how the university deals with sexual assault cases.
Over the last 2 years, women at USC have been filing complaints that college administrators discourage them from reporting sexual assaults or have downplayed the severity of the attacks. USC officials disclosed that they did not report 13 accounts of sexual assaults to federal officials for 2010 and 2011. USC's Women's Student Assembly Director, Kaya Masler, is working to reform the way the university deals with cases of sexual assault. Masler says students from the Safer Campus Coalition have been calling for greater transparency regarding cases of sexual assault for 2 years.
I find it a bit confusing that they didn't look into it in 2011 when students were bringing up these same issues.
USC officials say they underreported sexual assault cases because they wanted to protect the victims' identities. But Masler questions why anonymous reports weren't submitted.
Statistics doesn't mean an individual report with information, student's name and identity. And, you know, statistics could be anonymous reporting that they gather from the Center for Women and Men so that we're getting an accurate picture.
Investigations continue into whether USC violated Title IX, the federal law that requires impartial investigation into sexual assault cases. Masler says the university's focus should be on how to better handle future cases.
We need to have an internal shift within this university where we stop playing defense and start going on offense to think about how are ways that we can, as a community, better support people who experience sexual violence.
Masler and other USC students from the Safer Campus Coalition plan to meet with university officials by the end of this month to discuss how to update USC's sexual assault policy. Sarah Zahedi, Annenberg Radio News.
It's not strange to see Marilyn Monroe, Mickey Mouse, and Snow White find their home at the Hollywood Walk of Fame. But what about a Chinese artist who locked himself in a cage right in front of the Dolby Theater for 7 days and seven nights? Karen Lin went to talk to him and found the story behind his performance art.
Outside the Dolby Theater on the bustling Hollywood Boulevard, it's hard not to notice a 6-foot-high, 6-foot-wide black wooden cage. Chinese artist Chen Weiming lived there for 7 days. He had a hairband saying freedom on his head and cuffs on his hands and feet. This was a protest held by a group of Chinese activists calling for the immediate release of human rights advocates like Dr. Wang Bingzhang in China.
I'm an artist, so I use art way. They are a hero. In the dark China.
Dr. Wang Bingzhang is sentenced to life imprisonment for his pro-democracy activities. He has been in prison in South China's Guangdong province since 2002. His family held a protest in Times Square in New York City last month, and they plan to go to Las Vegas next week. Zhen Cunzhu is the organizer in Los Angeles.
We think this way is the most effective way and give the visitors a deep impression to show that they're still political prisoners in China. They have no free. They were just because they write some articles criticize the government or just because they support, they advocate for human rights and democracy in China.
Though most people passed by didn't know of Dr. Wang or what the protest was about, there were some showing their support and compassion. Manny Agler walked by the Dolby Theater on the fifth day of the protest. He was moved by the story and decided to help hand out flyers.
Sometimes culture and the language divides us because we're kind of suspicious of each other. But believe me, a real activist and a real person that fights for human rights will not look at color or nationality or anything. Seriously, they'll do it out of their heart and love.
The protest ended on Sunday evening with a symbolic gesture. breaking Chen out of his cage. Dr. Wang's family is still working on his release. They are on a hunger strike outside the United Nations headquarters. Their action might attract the attention from passersby, but Chinese watchers say it's unlikely for them to have an impact on the Chinese government. Caroline Edelberg, Radio News.
Governor Jerry Brown vetoed a bill that would allow immigrants who are not yet citizens to serve on juries. But as Emmanuel Martinez reports, that has not dampened the spirits of those in the immigration circles.
Governor Jerry Brown vetoed a bill that would allow immigrants to serve on a jury because he says it was a responsibility, like voting, reserved for citizens. But immigration attorney Nora Phillips says the bill would have leveled the field for those in the justice system.
Since there is such a large proportion of men of color that are in the criminal justice system as defendants, I think that this is unfortunate in that it makes it a lot less likely that you are going to have a jury of your peers.
Phillips is with the Central American Resource Center in Los Angeles. Her colleague at CIRLA, Jorge Mario Cabrera, agrees.
When we discuss being tried by a pool of peers, and if Latinos and immigrants are not represented in those jury pools, then we have to ask ourselves if, in fact, justice is being done accordingly.
But Phillips and Cabrera see progress being made. Last week, Governor Brown signed bills that would provide immigrants with driver's permits and the ability to practice law, regardless of their status. The governor also signed the Trust Act that would prohibit local law enforcement from detaining immigrants longer than necessary for minor offenses so federal immigration authorities can take them into custody. Cabrera sees the passing of these bills as California embracing its immigration population.
The number of bills that were passed by the governor in California should give us a clue as to how important immigrants are to the state's economy.
Which is important because
California loves its immigrant population, and California views immigrants, regardless of their legal status, as contributing members to Californian society.
And he says California's laws could lead the way for the rest of the nation.
Where California leads, others follow. That has been very true for many, many years and on many other issues, social issues, voting rights, women's rights, LGBT rights, and so forth.
The bills just signed by the governor will not go into effect until 2015. Emmanuel Martinez, Annenberg Radio News.
With the partial government shutdown now in its eighth day, many Americans are wondering when this stalemate will actually come to an end. I spoke with expert negotiator Robert Bourdon, founding director of the Harvard Negotiation and Mediation Clinic and professor at Harvard Law School, about what he thinks needs to happen in order for the government to reach an agreement. Welcome to the program, Mr. Bourdon.
Thanks so much for inviting me. Good to be here.
Can you explain to us in simple language what exactly is happening with the government shutdown? What kind of a negotiation are we talking about here?
I think it's a classic situation where two parties essentially both thought that the other was going to blink. It's not surprising to me that we're in the eighth day and that things don't seem to be getting better, because typically once you kind of have the open and notorious conflict, kind of the declaration of war in a way, both sides actually dig in more. People become actually more angry, more stubborn, and typically it's not until both sides reach what we call a mutual hurting stalemate that an opening for some kind of negotiated resolution or settlement comes. And we simply haven't reached that point yet.
So what do you think the president can do differently then in order to effectively move this process along?
Right. So the president is in a tough situation right now. His credibility is on the line. I think for a long period of time, the pattern, certainly in his first administration, was Republicans pushed the president to the cliff, and the president caves. The president blinks. This time he hasn't done that, and I think it's actually important for him to not do that from a negotiation perspective. Because if he blinks at this point, he actually teaches the Tea Party kind of minority in Congress that this is a strategy that can work. So then the question, to answer your question, well, what can the president do? One idea might be to think about, are there some third party who could work behind the scenes to find some opening? Might be something that the president could do.
Now, how about any advice for the two opposing parties?
Part of the reason why the Speaker of the House will not bring this issue to the floor is he's concerned that if he does that, the right wing of his party, the Tea Party people, will threaten his speakership. So one possibility you could imagine, Democrats and some moderate Republicans getting together, again, behind closed doors, and simply saying to Speaker Boehner, if you bring this to the floor, and if the right wing of your party challenges your speakership, we Democrats will actually throw in enough votes for you to stay as a speaker.
Do you see any winners or losers in this whole debacle?
I think the American people are the sure losers here. I mean, this is, you know, hurting our country. It's an embarrassment. And, you know, with the, you know, possible debt ceiling only making it, you know, moving from kind of bad to cataclysmic.
Do you see any end in sight?
Well, you know, I mean, this will end. I think this continues until pain thresholds get higher, or third parties come in and kind of force them to the negotiation table in some way.
We have been speaking with Director of Harvard Negotiation and Mediation Clinic, Robert Bordone. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
By day, Billy Lopez is an owner of the Reform School, a vintage shop in Silver Lake. But on Monday nights, she becomes a leader of the ukulele orchestra of the Western Hemisphere. She founded the group with her childhood friend and business partner, Tuti Maldonado. The group, which is made up of engineers, teachers, and librarians, give popular music a more whimsical sound. Danielle Tarasuk brings us the story.
So October 9th is a Wednesday. It's 2 weeks from the day.
Tuti and I, Tuti's my business partner here at Reform School, decided we wanted to play ukulele with a lot of folks, so we put out a call to start a group, and we were really surprised with the response we got, and we've been a band ever since. We don't play any typical Hawaiian ukulele music, but everything else is on the table. People tend to really like the classic rock numbers we do. They like Dream On, and Kashmir is popular, and a couple of the mashups that we do that are original arrangements, like the Suicide Reaper mashup, and we do one called Major Creep, which is a Radiohead and David Bowie. People really like that one. We do this silly little shtick where half the band is like, no, no, it's time to play the Bowie song. And then the other half says, no, no, I thought we were doing Radiohead. And then we just kind of break into it, and people think it's really funny when they find out it's two songs in one.
Just like a name.
If you thought the twerking sensation was coming to an end, think again. This time, the dance craze may be worth more than a few dropping stairs. Kay Ungram has more.
While it has its perks, college can be very hard. And let's face it, paying for college isn't all that easier. So when 19-year-old sophomore Emily Weiss first found out about rapper Juicy J's $50,000 scholarship, she and her paintbrush were all in.
What up, SC? This is Emily Weiss, and I painted Juicy J for his twerkathon 50K scholarship. Get your money. I don't want to owe the government anything. I don't want to owe the school anything. I don't want my parents to, you know, worry about paying for my financial needs, for my education, which is something that's so important to them. And, like, this is just a way that I can give back to them by doing literally the easiest thing that comes naturally to me. I put over 50 hours of work into creating this artistic manifesto to Juicy J's legacy. Like, I included everything that Juicy J epitomizes. Like, I have his blunts, his dollar bills, his strippers, the poles, and the money. And I did a custom Bombay bottle for his Taylor Gang, like, associations with Wiz Khalifa. And it's, I mean, I hope he, like, respects the fact that as an artist, I was inspired enough by him to create something.
A week after our interview, the day the contest had closed, it looked as though Juicy J had split his scholarship money in half. World Star Hip Hop, the host of the contest, showed winnings of $25,000 instead of the original $50,000. Some speculate the drop in cash had to do with rumors related to Miley Cyrus and Juicy J having a baby. Once those rumors were shot down, others simply figured his album sales didn't go as well as he had hoped. Fortunately for Emily and the other contestants, the number went back up overnight. The contest is still on, and the $50,000 scholarship is still up for grabs. As of now, Juicy J is still grading everyone's work in search of the lucky winner.
That report was prepared by Kate. Now we check in with Alec Lesnick to see what's coming up on Edinburgh TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Good to see you, Ani. How you doing?
Good to see you, too. What's going on at ATVN?
All right, well, I'm going to tell you. First off, there was a fire at the 117-year-old Crouch Memorial Church. The pastor was devastated by the fire. It was a historic building and the religious center for the community. The historic landmark blazed into flames and trapped two firefighters inside, both of which are now in stable condition. And the Heal the Bay segment is going to be coming up with our weather anchor, Lamarana Diallo. She's going to be talking about cleaning up the beaches and saving the environment. Lamarana will be showing us footage of one of the scheduled cleanups taking place, so putting us right in the middle of all the action. And ladies and gentlemen, the Dodgers win. Rock and roll. How cool of a game was that, guys? That was awesome.
Terrific.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, I had so much fun watching it.
Well, that is so great, Alec. Thank you so much for that update, and we'll be sure to tune in.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. See you tonight.
Eric Garcetti has been the mayor of Los Angeles for 100 days today. And to celebrate, Garcetti is offering a sneak peek at a new feature on the LA City official website. Garcetti's plan for the website is to let Angelenos track common questions like, how much crime is in my neighborhood? Or how long will it take to have a pothole filled? The idea is to use data to find out which city departments aren't working. As for Garcetti, data has been tracking his progress lately, too. A new poll by the Pat Brown Institute at Cal State LA shows Garcetti has a 56% approval rating.
I'm Max Schwartz with the Hot Seat on AnnenbergRadio.org and NeonTommy.com. Come stop by and take a listen as I ask politicians, government officials, and experts in their field questions you have a right to know the answer to.
Check out the Hot Seat online and keep clicking on our website. That's it for today. For this Tuesday, I'm Ani Ukar for Edinburgh Radio News.